Chapter 3. People hadn't come as quickly as they'd thought they would, nor as many. Sure, there had been a flurry of interest early on, in the weeks after Jesus had left the show in such a blur of publicity, but a lot of those early arrivals had been, well, JC would never use words like freaks or freeloaders, though Morgan and Becky would, but they hadn't exactly been committed. And when they realized they'd be spending the cold winter nights in those drafty Quonset huts, rented from a firm outside Austin, that they'd be expected to pitch in with digging and preparing hard ground, and that when they weren't doing that, they'd be helping build the houses they were to live in, a lot of them simply got back in their cars, or onto their motorcycles, or threw their packs over their backs, and disappeared back up that hillside. Pete and Claude had been the key to the whole thing getting off the ground at all. Working with an architect from Brunsville, Pete had drawn up plans for simple, wood-framed 2- and 3-bedroom homes. Lodges, really. They'd got Harry Pitts in, the local builder recommended by Jack Barry, and he and his crew had put up the first couple, by which point Pete had learned enough to be able to manage the building work himself, guiding Morgan and Chris and Jesus and a few of the other early arrivals as the first few cabins went up around the old ranch house. At this point, back in March, there were maybe 30 people here, including the original menagerie, and work went slow. When they weren't building, they worked for Claude, digging beds and boxing them in with old railway sleepers they'd found on the property, down near the wetlands, raising them up off the ground to thwart the night crawlers who came scuttling out when the sun went down, hungry for their greens. Good bait for those trophy bass, though. Everything in its turn. Then, in the spring, when the weather improved, a steady trickle of people began to arrive. Before long, there were a few dozen of them here. What kind of people were they? What kind of people would throw up their old lives, jobs and homes and friends, to live in a valley in the middle of Texas with a guitar player who claimed to be the son of God? Well, as you'd expect, some were hippies, just looking, itching, for a way to drop off the radar. Some were clearly damaged people, the kind of people who didn't have jobs, homes, or families to throw up in the first place. Some were clearly just curious or awestruck, fans of the show, dying to get a chance to hang with JC in person. It didn't matter. No one was turned away, although a few, surprisingly few, were asked to leave. Refusal to help with the work, a couple of incidents of women being harassed. Now and again, as the whole thing grew, they'd have to have meetings about stuff. Like his dad, JC hated meetings, and it fell to Becky to organize and run these gatherings, which were held in the old barn, everyone sitting around on bales or on the ground while topics were thrown around. The meeting in progress this morning was a fairly typical affair. The Traums, Marty and Angelina, the old hippie couple who lived in a huge teepee, a yurt, they called it, that they'd pitched way off near Big Lake, had complained that they kept on being woken early by the splashing and shouting of the kids who'd come down to dive and swim off the old wooden dock a couple hundred yards from their place. It was decided that, well, kids would be kids, and they couldn't really dismantle and move the lake. So if it bothered them that much, then a bunch of them would help the Traums move their yurt further away from the lake. Mary Shetterling, a very serious-minded 30-something vegetarian from San Francisco, had renewed her motion, to an audible groan from J.C., to try and grow a certain type of bean sprout in great quantity, a process which would require the building of a dedicated polytunnel, and which Claude felt was not worth the resources required. Once again, the decision was referred to Claude, who shook his head and bobbed a thumb down towards the ground. Mary was consoled by being told that Claude would help her build a small polytunnel out back of her cabin so she could grow a personal supply of the precious vegetable. Many of those who came were initially surprised at the degree to which J.C. was a hands-off kind of guy. He rarely spoke in the meetings. He never made big speeches or gave anything in the way of spiritual guidance. Most people in their early days here would at some point approach him with a question, religious, philosophical, or otherwise, and would come away bewildered at the inevitable, wow, who knows, response they received. Damn, J.C. said to the guys, I feel like Dylan in the 60s. Okay, Becky is saying, wrapping the meeting up. Now remember, we're into the fall now, and soon it's going to be winter. For most of you, it'll be the first one you'll have had here. It gets cold at nights, so if anyone's worried that their place isn't going to be warm enough, especially any of you with young kids, please talk to Pete or someone, and they'll see about getting you properly winterized. Those of you in tents, Marty, Angelina, I know you guys are okay in that bitching yurt. Some of you might want to think about moving up closer to the main ranch house or into one of the huts at some point in the next few weeks, because, trust me, come November, it will be cold. Okay, any more questions? Jesus, already getting to his feet, levering himself up by leaning heavily on Morgan's shoulder, when Julia Bell puts her hand up. Julia is a big, butch, old lesbian from New York City who arrived with her partner, Amanda, back in the early summer. Jules, Becky says, sorry to bring this up, but Guff still hasn't cleared up that area out back of his cabin, despite... Now hang on a minute, Guff Rennett says, getting to his feet. Oh, shit, Jesus thinks, lowering himself back down. The fucking Rennett brothers. Few were asked to leave, true, but some were constantly walking the line, like the Rennets. Their crew was comprised of brothers Guff, Pat, and Deke, and their wives and various children. They were swarthy Midwesterners who'd arrived back in August, and they constantly seemed to be getting into something with someone. They were rough and ready kind of survivalist types who'd had to be relieved of a couple of rifles, one semi-auto, and a handgun when they arrived. Just the kind of people who, honestly, weren't great neighbors. However, at one of the several meetings they'd had to discuss the problem of the Rennett clan, it had been Jesus who'd argued that they should stay. They did work hard. Guff, Deke, and Pat had single-handedly built their own cabins down in the tree line near Little Lake, next to Julia's, and the kids were great. Besides, Jesus said, not everyone who shows up here is going to fit our idea of the perfect citizen. We gotta teach folk by example, not just kick them out. But the Rennets weren't the neatest people in the world, and over the last couple of months, their back and front yards had gradually become littered with engine parts, old appliances, broken toys, and the like. Julia had complained a few times, and at the last meeting, Guff had grudgingly agreed to undertake a cleanup. Just a goddamn minute, Guff says, standing up now and glaring over at Julia. We cleaned up all that stuff you were talking about. No, you haven't, Julia says from her sitting position. Julia could be kind of a pain in the ass too, though, if you asked some people. That rusted-out old car with no wheels is still sitting. We're fixing that up, Deke says, looking up to Guff, who nods slowly. It was agreed, Julia says, that anything like that should be stored in the garage, rather than lying in your yard like...
How are we supposed to move it before we fix it up, Julia?
Guff says. That's not the point. Okay, guys, Becky cuts in. Deke, you can use the 4x4 and tow the car up to the garage and work on it there, okay?
Oh, shit, Guff says.
That means we gotta haul ass all the way up there whenever we want to work on it. Where I come from, folks have cars blocked up in their yards all the time. Well, Jesus says, getting to his feet, dusting the knees of his jeans off and speaking for the first time in the meeting. Like they say, we're not in Kansas anymore, Guff. We done here? He's itching to get back down to the studio with the guys, play around on that new junior, get back into that song they were working on. The meeting breaks up with mutterings from the Rennets and a triumphant flouncing out from Julia and Amanda. JC, Chris, Morgan, Claude, and Pete are drifting out towards the sunshine when Becky says, "Hang on, you guys. We need to go over some stuff." Groans as they drift back towards the big trestle table Bex has already seated herself at the head of. Just as they're settling down, Guff Rennett strides up.
"I ain't happy about this," he says. "That old truck ain't hurting no one."
Becky speaks without looking up from her papers. "Just take the 4x4 and move it. Please, Guff?"
"Taking orders from those fucking dykes."
"Hey," Jesus says, standing up. "Cut that shit out." Guff Rennett is a big guy, 6'4", around 220. Even after JC stands up, Guff still has a couple of inches on him.
"Listen, buddy, just do like Beck says, huh?"
JC says. Guff bristles, staring him down for a long few seconds, but feeling JC's presence, those eyes.
"I ain't happy about this,"
Guff repeats, before turning and stomping off.
"Shit, that asshole gets on my nerves,"
Morgan says.
"Amen,"
Becky adds. "Now, money."
"Oh, man,"
JC's head thunks onto the table. "Come on, Bex, can't we do this another time? I want to go play."
"Hey, will you stop making me feel like old Ma Boring just because someone's got to make sure this place doesn't fall apart?"
Becky says, flattening open her ledger.
"Now listen up. We got a little over $500,000 left in the bank."
"So happy days," Morgan says.
"Yeah, right," Becky says flatly. "We got state property taxes due end of the month. Repair bill for that plumbing thing.
Pete's put in a request for more timber. The schoolhouse is going to take more than we figured to get finished in time for winter." They were building a classroom for the kids. The tutors who came out from Bruntsville and the surrounding area to teach the kids held classes here in the barn, which had been fine since May, but come November. Becky goes on, breaking it all down, while Jesus tunes out. Truth is, he hates thinking about all this stuff. It worked like this. People who came along and lived in tents or in the Quonset huts for a while, and then decided they wanted to stay on, could buy the materials to build a home at cost. Labor wasn't a problem, as there were always plenty of bodies to pitch in. At the same time, folks who wanted to stay and who didn't have enough money were generally lent the materials anyway. They were almost self-sufficient in energy now, and all their food came from the estate, except beef, which they'd struck a deal for with the farmer's market in Bruntsville. But a property this big needed a lot of maintenance, some of it specialized or requiring hiring machinery they didn't have, and that cost money. There was outlay for toiletries, dry goods, the cooking items they couldn't grow, oil, spices, rice, and the like, and luxuries like liquor and so forth. Claude reckoned the grapes would be good for wine from next year. In terms of income, there was the money JC earned for giving the odd interview, although he'd turned down millions of dollars in potential fees for advertising products. And there would be the next chunk of his recording and publishing advances when they finally finished the album, or more accurately, when Stelfox accepted the album. Bottom line, Becky is saying now, it costs nearly $30,000 a month to keep this show on the road. That's without factoring in our generous policy on repeatedly loaning building materials to those who can't afford them, and without allowing for any major disasters, like that leak we had in the water tank, or, say, some weather damage. On that basis, you could confidently say we'll be good for another year at least. Now, there's going to be some income from the farm, thanks to Claude, selling off our excess crops, but I'm not sure exactly how much that's going to be. Okay, JC says, so I'll do some press or something. We can invite some of those stupid magazines to do a bunch of at-home-with type crap, and, excuse me for interrupting, Mr. Celebrity at Home With, Pete butts in, but I wouldn't be too sure your fee's going to be as high for that stuff as it was a year ago. Huh? Jesus says. He's right, Becky says. You're old news now. America's got new idiots to play with. The new series is starting. Damn, Jesus says. Am I, like, over?
Washed up, baby, Morgan laughs.
Shit. Okay, all I'm saying is can we all get our thinking caps on? Becky says. Ways to reduce costs and increase income. It ain't rocket science.
What would I know? Jesus says, still sulking. I'm a has-been.
Come on, Chris says. Let's go up the studio.
Uh-uh, Claude butts in. First, you and the has-been owe me a shift up on the farm.
Oh, man. Jesus says. Self-sufficiency costs, Bex says, and this is where you start paying.
In weeding, Claude adds, slapping him on the back.
Oh, man, Jesus repeats.